Peter Gagg, who drives it through.
We had the high notes on the park. That's how we became a great team together, you know. It was just unfortunate we never won anything.
Man's in trouble, there's Steve Kirk. The super sub has done it again, and Motherwell are back in front.
Without supporters, you cannot play a game. They are a very, very important part of the club.
Jukovic on the chase, might get there. Handel is with it. Jukovic!
I remember to this day, it was unbelievable, and that's another reason I love going back to Fir Park, because you do get to interact with the supporters again, who were wonderful for me.
Chance here for Motherwell. This is Pettigrew, outnumbered though, still has it. Chance of a lifetime for Pettigrew, and it is there!
Yeah, obviously being on the podcast is everything I've dreamed of.
Goes through the middle though, Marvin Johnson, defenders backing off.
Hello and welcome to the MFC podcast. Tonight, myself, Jay, and Buster are joined by Andrew Patterson. Welcome along, mate.
Thank you. Evening, gents.
All right.
Well, we actually tried a first take of this podcast on Sunday night, and I would say we were in a much better place in terms of our spirits about the club than we are this evening. A 2-2 draw on Saturday against Dundee, followed by a very disappointing 1-0 defeat to Partick Thistle on Tuesday. Jay, I think we've speculated as to where our place is in the league table this season. I think the headline news from last night is Motherwell are in a dogfight.
Yeah, I think that you could pretty much say that's spot on. I know Mark McGee had mentioned it, a week or so ago, but I hadn't quite subscribed to it fully. I thought that we still had enough about us. I thought that we had started to make enough progress under Mark McGee when he first came in, that perhaps that was a little premature. I thought that we might, if we managed to turn things around relatively quickly, we'd manage to, end February, maybe back once again, knocking on the top six, but unfortunately that doesn't seem to be the case. Saturday I wasn't there, no doubt you'll be able to give us a bit more detail on the game at Dens Park. Obviously saw the highlights and read the reports, and it doesn't sound as though we were particularly bad, but when you are conceding a last minute penalty, and then obviously the game last night, a last minute deflected goal, that's the kind of things that go against you when you are at the bottom end of the table. Not to mention it was just a poor performance last night. A good few players just didn't turn up. Some poor decision making by Mark McGee. And it's put us now in a situation where you're sort of looking at the fixture list and you're realising that, we are getting quite close to the split now. And these are the games that you really need to be doing well in to kind of put enough room between ourselves and the playoff place, and possibly even 12th place, before we get to that split. And the longer these performances occur and the longer the results aren't quite going our way, then the closer we're going to get to a similar scenario as we had last season.
Buster, the theme of the last two games, I suppose, a goal in the 88th minute, a penalty against Dundee that gave Dundee the leveller. Last night, the 89th minute, we lose a deflected goal to lose the game 1-0. We're not, obviously, closing games in great fashion. In fact, when you look at the Hamilton Accies game and you add that into the equation, that's now the best part of, well, it is 6 points dropped from late goals, and that's just in the month of January to the start of February, so it's quite concerning in that regard as well.
As you know, it's sort of cliche, but the game, play the game at the end, and it's disappointing. It feels like a loss in both of the games. I know we drew on Saturday there, but it felt like a loss at the time. I was fortunate not to be at either of them. Well, fortunate is maybe a bit harsh, but I wasn't at either of them. So I've not even watched the highlights of the Partick Thistle game yet either, to be honest with you. I just felt so so burst, basically. I just couldn't bring myself to watch it. I've started to watch the Mark McGee interview and couldn't really be bothered listening to that either, to be fair, but we're in a bad rut now. You know, and as you say, as has been mentioned, it's the amount of points we're picking up, the amount of games we're playing, it's poor form, it's relegation form, as McGee mentioned earlier. And I don't know what's really going to bring us out of that, to be fair, at the moment.
Andy, we had a wee chat just before we started recording tonight, and I think we both agreed that we're not a million miles away from doing enough in games. But I thought in spells on Saturday we were very good, and then followed up last night, it was a scrappy game and a poor pitch, but again I thought we were the better side for the best part of the 90 minutes. So we are doing a lot of things right, but the mistakes that we're making we're getting punished for. We could be doing with a wee bit of luck just now as well.
You would hope so. It's been an unfortunate spell. I wouldn't say so much that our form in December has given us the breathing space to have these results, but I'm glad we did have those results in December. And whilst our performances haven't perhaps matched those levels in a number of the games, I still don't think we're a million miles away. And I hope that it could be one of these cases where you simply get an element of luck which brings back the confidence, and that we can, you know, kind of put the iffy spell behind us. It's very fine margins. You even go back to the Hamilton game, you know, you're 5-6 minutes into injury time, maybe, as you said, from, you know, two extra points there that we could have got. The same idea Saturday there. That didn't make it up to Dens. But again, you know, you're a minute or so away, a couple of minutes away from registering what would have been deemed a fantastic result. Even last night, I think we would have been quite happy, you know, for the most part, coming away, you know, from Fir Hill beforehand with a point, and it looked as if we were going to get that. So it's fine margins. You know, there are players that are certainly off form at the moment. You know, Louis Moult desperately needs a goal, I would say, get him back in track again. He's one, for example. But we're not a million miles away. I'm hoping that, without jumping too far ahead, and I'm sure you'll be previewing it later on in the podcast, but, you know, a wee break from the league on Saturday for the cup game, you know, something fresh, and if we can get a result there, just refresh the impetus, you know, move forward and hopefully put this spell behind us. But I'm still of the belief, I'm still pretty confident in the players, pretty confident in the management, that we'll overcome these kind of difficulties, and if not certainly challenging for the top six, I would like to think that we're going to be a wee bit more comfortable position than what we are currently, you know, by the time we get to the splitter, certainly by the end of the season anyway.
Jay, the slim margins is something we've already discussed tonight, and we discussed it for the majority of the way home last night as well. The difference between a point and a defeat last night, although only as a point, but the kind of mood and everything else just completely changed. We were completely deflated by losing such a disappointing goal. Lionel Ainsworth switches off, the ball takes a wicked deflection and ends up in the corner of the net. It's kind of getting to the stage where there's clearly issues that we need to address, particularly in terms of decision making in crucial parts of the game. The substitutions are something that's discussed quite often, team selection, and I suppose that comes back to the manager, who for the first time since he's returned to the club is maybe feeling the pressure just a little bit just now.
I'm not sure I would suggest he's feeling the pressure. I think it would be a little early to be putting much pressure on him. I know that there's, you know, it kind of splits opinion across the support. I've said plenty of times that as a person, and then based on his last spell, I don't like him. But, you know, I was perfectly happy to praise him for the way we were playing before the Hearts game. But also, you know, I think it's worth pointing out when there are flaws. You know, there have been three occasions now I can think of that Mark McGee has really made some strange decisions. Not just, you know, the kind of
the kind of decisions where there isn't a massive amount of great logic to it, the kind of decisions that we as fans sort of look at and go, why is he doing that before a ball's even kicked? You know, Marvin Johnson at left back with Jake Taylor in front of him at Dingwall, you know, the entire clusterfuck of a team selection at Tynecastle before we get absolutely trounced, and then deciding to put Marvin Johnson up front last night. And you know, it wasn't just me who mentioned it while we were at the game. You know, everybody around kind of mumbled about, you know, what is he doing? Why is he putting Johnson up front? I mean, we're talking about a guy who has never jumped for a header in his life getting put up front during a game where we're resorting to long balls. It was just, for me, as soon as that decision was made, we kind of forfeited any chance of winning the game. And that's not something I'm saying with hindsight. It's something we spoke about at the time. So for me, there was no real surprise that we then didn't go on to win and win the game at that point. So I know that McGee, with his post-match comments, was quite keen to well, maybe not keen is the word, but you know, he was quite clear in that Lionel Ainsworth was to blame, and I think that's a concerning thing. You know, after the Hearts game, it was all about how he had no choice but to put Josh Law in midfield, when we know that's a lie because Chrissy Cadden has come in and been superb. You know, last night he was quite adamant that Lionel Ainsworth was to blame, when in reality I think a lot of the blame has to lie with the manager, amongst other players. I thought Stephen Pearson was absolutely woeful, Stevie Hamill, Scott McDonald, Louis Moult, you know, a lot of big players for us just didn't turn up last night. And I think that's a concern for me, because you know, it shows that yes, McGee seems to have a favoured starting 11. We did seem to start making progress, but at the moment he does seem prone to an absolute clangor of a decision, be it in terms of starting lineup, be it in terms of substitution. And when you get into the sort of business end of the season, and we're, you know, nearing the split or even after the split, and we're going to have some really important games where, you know, our entire season could hinge on a result, perhaps to, you know, wherever it is, maybe back at Far Hill or New Douglas Park or wherever we are, you know, it could come down to needing a win to stay clear of the playoff place. And at the moment, as much as I appreciate that Mark McGee is an experienced and a very capable manager, at the moment he does seem prone to the kind of clangor that could cost us one of those games. And that's a worrying thing, because it's not decisions where, oh well, I can see what he was trying to do and it didn't come off. Some of these decisions are up there with Craig Levein playing 4-6-0 in Prague. They're just the kind of decisions that Motherwell fans are looking at each other and going, why the hell is he doing this? And that's a worrying thing, because we do have the players to get out of this. We've shown prior to the Hearts game that we're good enough to get good results and put in good performances. Even the game against Ross County, and from what I hear from Dens Park, we put in decent performances. So we've got the players, we've got the team. We just need to stop making really, really stupid decisions.
Buster, my point there wasn't as much as I believe that McGee is under pressure in terms of his job's under any threat. It's more just the fact that the decisions coming into these big games seem a bit strange, and it was a flaw during the Barraclough era, with the exception of the two playoff games, that we'd really seem to struggle and our bottle seemed to crash coming into these big games. The big game mentality just wasn't there. And even early on, we talked up how big the Hearts game was at Tynecastle. We lose that 6-0. The County game, it was a great chance to bounce back. We lose that 2-1. We've lost 1-0 to Thistle in a game that would have given us a good bit of breathing space at the bottom, or would at least have given us a bit of a gap over them. So we're not winning these big games, and that's concerning. We're going to go into a run where we'll have United at home, we'll have Kilmarnock at home, we'll have Thistle at home. And normally you would sit there thinking, we can take 7 points from that, we can maybe even take 9, but we're not winning these big games. And I know it's only the start of February, I know there's still a long way to go even to the split, but there's just a few alarm bells ringing that we're not winning these big games again.
Yeah, other than maybe the Hearts game, I know we were a bit confident going into the Hearts game, but other than maybe the Hearts game, as you say, when you look at them on paper, they're pretty even matches. There should be no reason why we shouldn't go looking for 3 points. I honestly don't know what it is. As you say, we don't seem to be putting in performances when we need to. Not so much the performances then, just to correct myself, as I was saying, you know, we look not too bad. I've actually got the highlights on the new, and to be fair, I've not really seen Partick Thistle have many chances.
Neither team did.
It was just a dire game. It seems to be a sort of, you know, just sort of kick it towards the goals and see what happens effort. The most of the chances are sort of blocked crosses and things like that, I'm seeing. But it's kind of strange, as you say, you know, we don't seem to have the character to win these winnable, probably the most important games around about us. You know, it's all right going to Parkheadon winning 2-1, and, you know, we were all grateful and we all loved that. But, you know, would you rather have maybe lost that respectably, picked up, you know, a win here and a win there, maybe, you know, 7 or 8 points elsewhere, rather than coming away with, you know, 3 points there and 2 points at the last 10, 15, whatever it is. As Jay said as well, McGee's got his critics, so it's like Jay said, I don't think it's any sort of, or like you said, sorry, Spar, I don't think it's any sort of worry on his job, but, it, you know, McGee's people who, you know, out of nowhere were saying it's the wrong appointment before it was even done. You know, it gives them the chance to pop their head up and say, I tell yous. But, you know, regarding all the strange decisions and things like that, I read something that Andy Parson, our guest, went and wrote on Steelman Online today.
You don't even call by his full name. He's our guest tonight.
I can't know, but you're Andy as well. You know, Andy can elaborate on it, but, you know, he wrote something that was either the day or yesterday, but I read it this morning, or this afternoon, sorry, where he says, it's a sort of damned if you do, damned if you don't. If you keep it the same, you've no plan B. If you do try and change it, it doesn't work. You know, you look like an idiot, basically. So I can, you know, it's a difficult one, but I don't know what the answer is, to be honest with you.
Andrew Patterson, the... The thing is, I think the consolation, should it be possibly, for want of a better word, is we have got a decent run of fixtures coming up beyond the cup game, where we could look to take points. It's not a really difficult run of games ahead of us. There will be Aberdeen in March, but we can look towards the next run of games with a bit of confidence. It's quite a strange feeling, to be honest.
In all honesty, I haven't looked that far ahead. I think the way things have gone in the last few weeks, it's back to these kind of situations where you have to look at one game at a time, focus on that, try and get the points, get the win, and then just move on. I don't see any, you know, we're only going to put pressure on ourselves if we look 4 or 5 games ahead and put tallies that we need to get X amount of points from these games. Otherwise, if you don't do it, then psychologically you've failed already, and it puts additional pressure on going forward. So I think it'll be the case that, yeah, well, these fans maybe can look and talk up what we would hope for, what we anticipate. It's one game at a time stuff. The thing, kind of going looking back the way is, again, I think there are things that we could change, we improve upon. It's like a bit of a cliche when it comes to Motherwell about single goal leads, and the further and further, you know, the longer and longer we get into a game, the further and further back we seem to go, and inviting pressure on ourselves rather than doing a more professional job and seeing things out. But I think we have to take into consideration the context of how these goals have kind of came about. Of course, there's these points, a questionable penalty against Hamilton. You know, I know a lot of people said that Rui's hands were up on natural position, blah blah blah. It's not up for debate, but there was a bit of debate about it. Likewise, there was a hell of a lot of debate about the incident, you know, Saturday that cost us the win, the penalty at Dens. Even thinking, like, you know, going back the week before, we'd a potential softish claim perhaps, but with a claim for a penalty, how those things can kind of change. It's not as if the Hearts game apart, obviously, which has been well discussed, and, you know, we know the reasons for that, self-inflicted largely, but that apart, you know, we're not getting scudded. It's not like January of last year where Aki's have taken 5 off. It's not like, you know, the last game at Fir Hill where it was just utterly, utterly abysmal. You know, it's a deflected goal last night has cost us, you know, a penalty at Dens where we were getting you know, towed 4-1 last season with our keeper chucking the ball in the net and all sorts. So, you know, it's not quite as desperate as, you know, as some are kind of making out when you read the forums and what have you. But going forward, see, I'm quite happy. We game at a time. Let's see how we go. Focus on that and then see where we go thereafter.
Do you believe that the consistency in the team selection is something that we should be sticking with? I know we'll go on to talk about the transfer window in more detail, but Gomez making his debut off the bench yesterday, do you think there's some scope in maybe changing things about? Or do you feel that McGee has now found a settled 11 and should only change it when called upon or forced into change?
I don't really see, although we've added Gomez, when Grimshaw was playing generally, towards the end he was kind of more on the right hand side, kind of drifting in, and I'm not really sure what kind of position Gomez plays. To me, I kind of got the impression he was more central, so you're still really get that kind of dilemma as to who you're putting out on the right hand side. Do you go for Cadden? He's certainly not done anything to have the jersey taken off him from his appearances so far. Do you put Gomez in there, which would kind of leave you perhaps more kind of defensively set up? It would be interesting to want to see how would work his kind of inclusion into the team. Last night we saw eventually Pearson being moved out to the left hand side, but clearly he seems to rate Marvin, so he seems to be a stick on in there. So where would you then accommodate him? So it's an interesting one for putting, you know, Gomez in alongside Pearson and Lasley in there. That apart, there's not a huge amount of options in there. We've got Fletcher really as your other striker currently. Maybe if you get Faddy back, you can get something else, but there's not a huge amount of scope for change there. We've shifted quite a lot of the deadwood, so some limited options, you know, elsewhere round about the pitch. So I think it's a case he's decided upon his team pretty much there. He's got his, you know, 15, 16, and we need to hope that we don't get injuries, suspensions, and, you know, he can get the best out of that team, that squad that he's got between now and the end of the season.
I think, as you say, whenever I've seen Mercado Gomez, you know, he's a central midfielder. He'll sit there and he'll kick everybody. You know, he's a pretty good player as well, but I think he's more a tough tackling midfielder. I think the only person who can play that Grimshaw sort of central right midfield role that he was sort of playing is probably Chris Cadden, and that's maybe a bit of a problem when it comes to it, because I don't really see Pearson. Pearson's probably the best player, as we've discussed, you know, when he's on the ball. Lasley, I don't really see getting dropped. So if MD's going to be dropped, it probably might be Cadden, despite the fact he's, you know, he played really well in the games that I've seen him anyway, which then, as you say, leaves us with Morgano Gomez, Keith Lasley and Pirro in that sort of three-man midfield that McGee likes, which, you know, could leave the right-hand side a bit exposed, might be a bit short when we go up to, you know, attacking. I don't mean short in height, I mean like sort of width-wise, when, you know, we're going to rely on Josh Law running up and down that side all day. Yes. I think we're still a wee bit short in midfield, to be honest with you, despite the fact we brought him in.
Well, we'll talk about the transfer window in more detail. It was more a story of players departing the club than coming in. Morgado Gomez, arriving on loan from Hearts until the end of the season. That's the only activity coming in. We have been told that, or rumour has it, that James McFadden will put pen to paper and a deal to the end of the season before the week is out. Craig Reid, as expected, leaving the club in deadline day as well. He joined a long list. I would say, Jay, the only noticeable or absence from the first team squad is Liam Grimshaw's loan running out, and I'm signing for Preston. That is a big loss. I think the rest of the players that have left, we kind of expected to.
Yeah, definitely. I think when we've spoke about it in the past,
you know, when Barraclough was still at the club, we made the point on numerous occasions that he'd get into the habit of hoarding a little bit and was bringing in lots of strikers and all this kind of thing. So I think this window, Mark McGee's window, was probably going to be first and foremost about clearing some of the deadwood. I don't think there was any doubt about that. I think in that regard, we've done a good job of getting rid of guys like, you know, Taylor, Robinson, Reid, you know, guys who were never going to be anywhere near the first team or shouldn't have been anywhere near the first team again. So that's a success on that front. You're right, losing Grimshaw is disappointing. I think we spoke about it at the time, but I think also the sort of the suggestion that we were on the verge of managing and we bring him back in, either on loan or potentially longer term, I'm not sure. But the fact that we were on the verge of that when Man United decided they were going to sell him to Preston, that was a bit of a, you know, salt in the wounds there. But for me, again, I think for me, yes, it's nice that we managed to get an extra midfielder in, but I think it was always going to be about clearing the deadwood, and presuming everything goes all to plan and we're still on the top flight and McGee's still the manager, I think that it now kind of paves the way for maybe a bit more of a rebuilding job in the summer. Now that we've freed up some space in the squad, we can hopefully go about identifying targets that might come in, you know, whether it's pre-contracts, whether it's more loan signings, whatever it is. So that's something at least to be a wee bit positive about, the fact that okay, we've not brought in as many players as we maybe have liked, but we've certainly freed up the space to then go on and do that in the summer. And even then, you know, we kind of said that we needed a midfielder and perhaps now another striking option, because obviously with Clarkson going on loan and things like that. So if you bring in Gomez and McFadden, although McFadden was already there, he obviously wasn't expected to be here past January. So if you do end up with those two players, then you've kind of ticked those boxes. I know exactly what the lads were saying there in terms of that right-hand side position, McCadden, and Gomez isn't that type of player. But at the end of the day, you know, we've brought in a very, very good SPL-level midfielder and potentially Faddy. And if that's the kind of business you're going to do, then, you know, I think it's better to be slightly more positive about it than negative.
Buster, I know there's always talk about bringing through the young players and developing our own talent, but I think when you look at a league position, there is a real case for enhancing the squad with experience, and Gomez and McFadden both fit the bill nicely there. You're just hoping that, I kind of hope that McFadden missing out in his move to America is, despite that, he'll have been trying his heart out to get there, and perhaps is better fitness-wise than he has been for some time. Gomez played a lot for Hearts in the early part of the season, maybe fell away, but certainly looked fit and a real terrier in the middle of the park during his half hour or so in the park at Fir Hill. So I think both are strong additions and solid additions, which is possibly more important than the fact that giving young players a chance is all good and well, but if they were to be part of a disappointing defeat, it could knock them for six, whereas I would prefer the solid players kind of consolidate in a league position, and then that gives us a chance to bring in some of the more experienced inexperienced faces. Sorry.
So it's almost like we've kind of, it's not perhaps, you wouldn't say maybe quality in terms of some of the teams that we've had in recent years, but it is almost like a return from, you know, going back to, you know, quality over quantity in terms of the squad, whereas we seem to go completely the opposite direction under Barraclough. So it seems to be back more a more tight, compact squad, and in addition to the, you know, the people that will come in the summer, you know, hopefully that also clears a you know, a pathway for better opportunities for some of our younger players as well going forward too.
There's one that stands out from just looking at the squad list, a kind of curious case, and that's Louis Lang, who just doesn't seem to be getting any sort of a look in. I know that Kennedy was very impressive at the start of the season, and then we've obviously found a centre-half pairing that with Ben Hall and Preston that McGee seems to have went for, the kind of experienced head and then the young legs, McManus and Hall partnership at centre-defence. But Louis Lang, again, not in the 18 yesterday, seems to it just seems to be so out of favour. It's been quite surprising considering I think all of us were delighted to see him stay on after an impressive loan spell last season.
You're right. I think that with Louis Lang, you know, there was when McGee came, when we first played Celtic, Louis Lang obviously, you know, sat in that defensive midfield role, and McGee talked him up saying he's got, you know, all the attributes to make a good midfielder. There's been absolutely no talk of that ever since, and I think at that point McGee was just covering his arse basically. He clearly doesn't really fancy him. I would have said Kennedy as well. I know Kennedy played it right back the other week there, but I don't think he fancies him either, to be fair. And I think he blatantly said, you know, some of these players just haven't shown, you know, what they're worth in training. No, a couple of weeks ago as well. The as you mentioned as well, Andy Ross, the podcast host this time, as you mentioned as well, you know, we brought in McFadden. Well, sorry, we're hoping to keep him on at least. Sorry. Hopefully, as you say, you know, the fact that his move to America seems to have fallen through can spur him on to put in a wee bit of the, you know, the silky feet that we're used to. I don't think we're going to see him, you know, sprinting 30 yards down the park anymore. I think that those days are, you know, behind him. But hopefully, you know, he's got a wee silky touch here and there. And, you know, if he chips in with a goal or two, if he gets any time on the park, then that'd be magic. And as Jay mentioned as well, actually, Margaro Gomez, he is a very good SPL midfielder. And I think that could present a bit of a problem. Probably, you know, a good problem, as I say, because we've got Lasley and Pirro are really the only people who'd be looking to maybe displace. So, you know, it's maybe going to be a bit of a headache for McGee. You know, does he drop the club captain? Does he drop Pirro, who, as again I've said, probably been one of our better players of the past, you know, year or so. So it's not as big a squad as it was. You know, we've got rid of some of the deadwood, as people are calling it, but there's still a fair amount of quality there, and hopefully they should see us right to the end of the year.
Jay, it's one slight concern that we've let guys like Robinson go, Craig Moore's back out on loan. Suddenly, we feel a wee bit short in the striking department. I know you've got Fletcher, who started the season pretty well, struggled with injuries. I was really disappointed with Wes Fletcher when he came on at Dens Park, albeit he was only on the park for 15-20 minutes. Suddenly, we're forced into going with Marvin Johnson behind Scott McDonald, or as a strike partner for Scott McDonald last night. Fletcher didn't get on. You've got to wonder where the thinking is in that we're perhaps not as blessed with striking options as we first thought.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it is an interesting one. Obviously, a lot will depend on whether McFadden does end up staying or not. If he does, then, you know, you'd look at that as four strikers. Again, I don't even know what the situation is with Clarkson at St Mirren. Perhaps, you know, there may be the chance to recall him if anything was to happen, you know, long term to any of our forwards. Last night, as I said earlier, it was just such an interesting one. You had Wes Fletcher on the bench. You know, I thought he looked decent enough at the start of the season. Obviously, didn't see him, and I wasn't at Tynecastle, wasn't at Dens. I didn't see the impact that he made, or lack of impact that he made, so I wouldn't want to comment. But when you have a striker on the bench, and you're going to bring off Louis Moult, who was poor again last night, you know, for me, if you're going to move a left winger, who, as I said earlier, most folk at the game seemed pretty much in agreement that Marvin Johnson up front was never really going to work. It may have worked on a pitch where you could have played, you know, decent through balls, maybe get somebody like Pearson or Lasley, you know, splitting defence with through balls for Johnson to use his pace.
I actually think that's why you put him through the middle, because
the surface
there was a wee bit better. I totally agree with you. He's not the kind of person that is going to head the ball. He doesn't look particularly interested whenever there's any kind of contact comes near him, and whenever he did get the ball, the first thing he did is he wanted to move out to the wing
and try and work his way back in and put a cross in. So I agree. I can understand to an extent why McGee has maybe done that. Basically, you know, looking at the quality of the pitch there in comparison to the wings, he does have a decent shot on him whenever he's, you know, chooses to do so. We've seen him score a couple of decent finishes. He's not scared to have a go either. So the right kind of ball going through, then it's maybe not as wild as it sounds, but it clearly didn't work. It was evident very quickly it wasn't working. And you know, the sensible move for me would have been, as if you're going to do that, then it would have been Fletcher on, you know, for more, the more sensible substitution. But I can't, to a very slight extent, see why he kind of done it. There's also the bit that Buster was alluding to earlier on, the fact that I doubt Thistle would have been prepared in any way for him being, you know, centrally played. So it may be something, you know, games delicately poised, something a wee bit off the wall, wee bit of uncertainty, you might get an edge. I think he gambled at it. I don't think it worked at all, but I can see why he kind of gambled at it to a certain extent.
I would agree if, you know, on paper or on FIFA or on Football Manager, you know, it kind of makes sense, I suppose, in terms of stats, you know, a fast player up against. But it wasn't that kind of game. I think anybody who was, you know, I'm sure those of us who were at the game would agree that, you know, the conditions of the pitch, the way the game was going, it was still just a stupid, stupid decision, because the game isn't, because you put Marvin Johnson up front, the whole comp, you know, the whole game isn't going to suddenly fit into the way you want it to be. We were playing the long ball. Essentially, the ball was going to Ripley or McManus, and we were launching it forward. And any threat that we had going forward just vanished as soon as we put Johnson up there. But, you know, I mean, again, though, if you're Wes Fletcher, you know, the original question was about strikers. If you're Wes Fletcher and you're warming up in front of the Motherwell support and you're watching your team struggle to really create much or to get a shot on goal, and Marvin Johnson gets put up front, you know, it doesn't say a great deal about where you fit into the team. So I do agree with what you were saying earlier, Sparrow, in terms of strikers. It's interesting. I wouldn't say that we're perhaps completely void of strikers now, because, as I said, we've still got Malt, we've still got McDonald, we've got Fletcher there. If McFadden signs in, there's a fourth. But it does seem to be as though we've kind of went from one extreme to the other. We've went from, you know, six or seven strikers to suddenly, you know, an injury, a suspension, and we do actually look a bit fragile up there.
I suppose we do have the guys we've seen about Clarkson coming back. We do, they think the loans, I don't know so much about Craig Moore, but the loan for Dylan Macken was a development loan, so I think he can get called back, if I'm right. He can certainly come back and play in the 20s. So I would assume if he's able to play there that he could be recalled if things get particularly light in numbers and we needed another forward.
Yeah, I think the thing for me, I think McGee's already assessed Fletcher and realised that he's not up to par. I think that's the main reason he didn't come on. He gave him another chance at Dens, and he wasn't even capable of holding the ball up or bringing McDonald into play. Sorry, Moult into play. It was McDonald that went off on Saturday. You've then got the case, Louis Moult's been absolutely fantastic this season, but he's in, by his standards, a poor run of form just now, and his head's went down a wee bit. I think last night he was subbed basically because he had played the heavy pitch for 90 minutes against Dundee. He was toiling a bit against Thistle, and McGee tried to change it up to go on and win the game. It just backfired massively. And for me, it just smacked of being trying to be a bit too clever. Even if Pearson had moved in behind McDonald, I could have seen the reasoning behind that. But playing Marvin Johnson, a player who's so inconsistent as it is, out of position, he's got no ability to... I actually think he's pretty scared of heading a ball. He shucks out the way. He's just not interested in putting his head in that ball. It was just a bad decision, and it was a poor assessment of the player's ability as well for me. He's worked with Johnson for long enough now to realise what his qualities are and where his flaws are. And I would say his ability to win the ball and bring the ball down is one of his major flaws.
I can't disagree with you. You know, as you say, any time the ball gets diagonally punted across the park towards Johnson, you know it's going to end up in the stand, because I'm pretty sure I've seen him duck out the way a few of them.
It genuinely looks quite scared of a leather football. For a professional footballer, that is quite frightening.
I think it's maybe a wee bit harsh on, you know, to say he's been inconsistent, really. I think he's been pretty decent. Don't get me wrong, he seems to die a death after about 65 minutes, but I think quite a few times this season, you know, we've given the ball on the left, he's run at the right back. Maybe he's not putting in the final ball every time, but, you know, if he was doing that, as the old saying goes, he wouldn't be at Motherwell. But I think Johnson's been pretty good, you know, other than the fact that he doesn't seem to want to head on the ball.
No, I'm not singling him out as a poor performer. I'm more just saying that the decision of the manager last night to play him in that position was a major mistake, and it was quite an obvious mistake. When there's people in the crowd that are 18 stone and haven't ever kicked a ball in their life pointing it out, then that's... Oh, there's your computer starting up, pal. It's quite an assessment of the decision. And if it had worked, then I suppose we would have all been sitting here tonight saying, what a fantastic decision, and maybe Marvin Johnson's got a bit more to his game than we thought. But as it transpired, McGee got it wrong.
That's exactly what it is again. And, you know, going back to the point that Andy made earlier online, that's basically exactly what he was saying. I think, you know, it worked out and McGee would have been hailed as a genius, although, I wasn't there, so I can't really comment. But as you're clearly saying, Jay was sort of clearly saying, and, you know, as Andy said after his wee paragraph, that clearly wasn't working either, so it should have been rectified almost immediately, and, it, you know, from what I believe, led to believe it wasn't.
We've still got quite a lot to cover before the end, so Jay, will quickly bring you in and get your opinion and your thoughts on a wee incident that occurred last night that almost was blown into a full-scale incident that could have got quite dangerous, actually, with one drunken arse at the game acting up. Before you knew it, 12, 13 police wading into a section, something that has happened quite a lot in recent times, it must be said. Nobody can condone the way the wee guy was acting, but wow, what an overreaction, and it could have become dangerous if more people get involved and there was more of a reaction. It could have turned very serious and very nasty quickly.
I think you've hit the nail on the head there. Unfortunately, it's one of those situations that we are seeing pretty frequently, and unfortunately it's the kind of situation where there's no real debate had on it. You know, there is overzealous policing, there's heavy-handed policing, football fans are treated poorly at times. Basically, you had the situation where someone acts a tube, they're accosted by the police, they decide they don't want to, you know, they're not interested, and they run away. And I don't care who you are, if you run away from the police in that situation, you're going to be punished. And what happens then is just, you know, absolutely mental. I mean, we said at the time that the police could easily identify them and lifted them on the way out the ground. Instead, they were almost bulldozing Motherwell fans out the way, clambering over chairs, trying to pile on top of them. It was just, it was surreal. But we are in this kind of weird culture at the moment where a certain number of football fans, not just at Motherwell games, but at all Scottish grounds, seem to think that by being a football fan, it gives them carte blanche to act whatever way they want to. And on the other side, we've got overzealous policing. So you get into this kind of weird universe where nobody is really having a proper debate about it. You've got one side who completely ignore the fact that, well, not them all, but there is this kind of polarised sort of opinion that, oh, the police, you know, it's all the police fault, it's all the steward's fault. At the end of the day, you know, if they hadn't acted like a wee dafty and then they ran away from the police, it wouldn't have happened in the slightest. But then on the other side, the police can point at that and say, well, you know, he resisted arrest, what were we supposed to do? So it's this kind of weird situation we're in where the police are being far too heavy-handed. Some of their antics last night was just completely beyond the pale, and it has to be analysed and it has to be stopped. But you can only really have a serious debate on it when people actually acknowledge that there are folk who are acting like idiots that are causing it in the first place. You know, a similar example is, you know, it was all over the news and all over social media about the Motherwell fan who, according to the Motherwell Times, got 5 months for setting off a smoke bomb at New Douglas Park. And of course, a lot of people jump on that and they say, oh, that's a disgrace, that's a farce, 5 months for setting off a smoke bomb. No, I mean, he set off a smoke bomb, was given bail conditions and broke them. And, you know, it's pretty well known that if you break bail conditions, then you're going to get hammered for it. So it's this kind of weird scenario at the moment where both sides are just completely parochial or completely, you know, refusing to engage with the actual truth of what's going on. And until that changes, then it's just going to keep happening. You're going to keep having people acting like tubes, acting out of line, misbehaving, and then the reaction is going to be far worse than it really should be. And it's just going to happen over and over and over again because there's never going to be a serious debate about it.
I don't want to go on about it for too long, but the bigger thing in it as well, there was a lot of chat for self-policing and so on. The wee guy didn't appear to be part of the group that have been protesting so hard for better conditions for the football fans and for Motherwell fans in particular. So you can't really, I don't think you can really say, well, why did they not stop it? Because you can't stop someone going and drinking 8 pints of lager and then going to the football and acting like a dick, basically. It's just unfortunate that everyone else is brought into it because of the severity and how clear the overreaction was. You actually saw players warming up and they'd all stopped to watch what was going on, and they were looking with a sheer bewilderment at how much a storm in a teacup it was. But it was nearly brought to the boiling point because there was people getting really agitated and really, really upset about the way the police went about their business, and it's a dangerous way to manage a crowd, that's for sure.
Oh, absolutely. I think it could have been a riot. It was that, it was close enough to being that. You talk about self-policing, you're right, you can only self-police, you know, your own mates, your own group. You can't expect folk who want to create an atmosphere to also go out their way to self-police people who are absolutely nothing to do with them. But, you know, a bit more self-awareness, a bit more responsibility. It doesn't need to always be about picking, you know, jumping on reasons to sort of protest against the heavy-handedness that we do see and we do know exists. And there can be, you know, a more kind of respectable way of approaching the subject, and that is to say, right, this is out of line, you can't behave like that, we don't condone that, it was stupid, but, you know, there's no reason for the police to act that way. We've not reached that point. You know, we're still at the point where anything that kind of happens, as soon as a police officer gets involved, regardless of what the incident has been, there will be chance of heavy hands, empty stands. It really doesn't matter what's went on. And so you've just got that kind of stalemate, if you like, because those who don't see a problem with the policing, including the police themselves, can just say, well, you know, stop misbehaving and it won't be an issue. Unfortunately, it just comes down to the fact that football fans need to be squeaky clean. If they want to prove that police are out of line, then they need to be squeaky clean to do so. Otherwise, they just give justification. And again, that's not saying that it wasn't completely out of line last night. It was.
Yeah, I think that pretty much covers it. As I say, hopefully the punishment for the young guy isn't too severe. The way it was handled was very, very poor, and seeing the head of security for the club liaising with Thistle's head of security at half time, I think that word quickly got to him that it was a bit of an overreaction. So we'll see how that one goes. Anyway, Saturday in the Scottish Cup fifth round game against Inverness, it's a nice wee distraction from the league, I suppose, first and foremost, but with a quarter-final place at stake, Buster, it's one to look forward to, despite our poor start to 2016.
Yep, I think it's exactly what you say, you know, a wee distraction away from the pressures of the league. You know, as it's pointed out, I think it's from 5th to Kilmarnock, there's only an 8-point gap or something like that, so it's a tight wee pocket we've got in the league. It'll be good to maybe you know, for the players maybe to take their minds off it and go out and just try and, you know, just basically try and win. This is, I mean, it's only been one game so far, but you know, this is the best cup run we've been on in years. So it'd be interesting to see what happens. The last time Inverness came to Fir Park, they gave us a doing. So, you know, maybe that'll be in the back of the players' minds and maybe it'll spur them on a wee bit. And as you said, you know, quarter-final place at, last 16, place up for grabs, so.
No, quarter-final place up for grabs.
Sorry, is this the last 16, aye?
Yep.
Oh. See, there we go. Those big teams must get in it even later than I thought we did.
That's right, we've just progressed around in the last 10 seconds.
Sorry then, well, it's quarter-final, so, you know, I mean, it's we're nearly there. As you say, you only need to win 4 or 5 games to win a cup these days, so I don't see why, you know, as I say, all these teams, Inverness, ourselves, we're all of similar calibre, so hopefully, you know, we can progress and see what happens with it.
Andy, there's no doubt this will be a difficult game. The holders coming to Fir Park, they convincingly beat us 3-1 towards the end of last year, and that was despite us being in quite a good run. Despite that, the game could have changed in a few decisions. The penalty was saved and then the referee instructed it had to be retaken and the resulting kick was scored. We're 3-0 down and didn't really seem to deserve being 3-0 down at that point in the game and kind of threatened to get back in it towards the end. It'll be a tough one, but it's one that I still believe that we can get a result from.
Yeah, it's certainly winnable. The fact that we're at home, you would hope that we're going to make use of our home advantage. Maybe slightly different to see how many Cali bring for a cup game, whether that has any kind of difference from normal. You would expect maybe 7 or 8 quid cheaper from what they're used to paying, something a wee bit different, that they'll travel down. We'll have a good atmosphere, good travel and support, so like a financial reward either way, what happens, you know, on the park, that we benefit off it. I'm looking forward to it. I like the cup games. It's one of the high points of the season for me, and it should be a good one. It's very, very evenly balanced, I would say. So I hope, just with the fact that we've got home advantage, that we can make that count and progress into the next round. But I don't think we really want it. The club will probably take it, the replay and a potential, you know, televised game and however much you get for that, but I don't really fancy a replay in Inverness in all honesty, but it'd be good if we could take care of it from a first time of asking.
Well, Andy's basically just covered my next question, Jay. That is definitely that we don't want to be going to Inverness midweek for a replay, but despite the kind of bad feeling about the last couple of results, I still believe there is that wee bit of optimism around the Scottish Cup this year, and I'm just really looking forward to the distraction more than anything else of not playing for these 3 points, which every game between now and the split are going to be so crucial.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, somebody mentioned it earlier, I think it was Andy Patterson, about the fact that you know, we were close enough last night to getting a result that it suggests there's still plenty to be positive about, and particularly when you're going into a cup game when there isn't that kind of added pressure. You know, if any of the players have maybe felt a little bit, you know, that time's ticking on and the last couple of results haven't been great, perhaps haven't quite shaken off the game at Tynecastle, then yeah, a cup tie gives you the chance to kind of, you know, step aside from the league business, put, you know, the bad run you're on aside and kind of just view it as a one-off game. So definitely looking forward to it. A replay, again, it's one of those ones where, you know, a replay would not be good, particularly in a congested February, but if we're 1-0 down, get into the last 5 minutes and we score late on to take it to a replay, then I'll be perfectly happy. But it's definitely a game. You know, we've got the players there to win the game, you know, without question. You know, if guys like Pearson, McDonald, Malt, Johnson, you know, if those guys turn up and put in a good performance, then there's no reason why we can't be in the quarterfinals.
Yeah, slightly reduced entry for the game on Saturday, £15 for adults, so pay at the gate as well, still available, so try and get down to Fir Park and get behind the team. It would be good to see a good crowd for what promises to be one of the most exciting games of the season. Jay, a late remember well question this week, but still quite a few responses, I believe.
Yeah, we fired up a very, very late one because obviously we'd already recorded the podcast before I remembered, but re-recording meant we fired up a new one. I'll just read the Twitter ones. It was just basically with the transfer window on Monday, it was just asking, you know, most memorable well-related transfer news, not necessarily best signings, but just kind of, you know, signings that at the time piqued some interest. Keith Foster said, at a quiz night, Alex McLeish told us he'd completed an exciting transfer. Turned out we'd signed Eddie May. He says, also that time we signed Sasa Cucic was a bit mad. Derek Cairns said, Cooper, he was a genius and an entertainer, and Tommy McLean got much more out of him than his previous team. Damon McLaughlin said, Brian McClure coming back, rubbish in hindsight, but at time of signing was well excited. And Scott had replied and said, the one in an hour's time when we found out that Michael Higdon has re-signed, hashtag Michael Higdon's having a party. There were a few other on Facebook, but I'm currently not logged on to Facebook at the moment, so I can't read those. So if you want to check out the replies on Facebook, go check out our Facebook page and fire up your own one.
That was a bit of a cop-out, but we'll let you away with that just that.
But what any shouts from yourselves? I still remember the time that I was told by my dad that we'd signed Tommy Coyne, and I'd no idea who he was, but in my head it was just, you know, it was just an image of a giant pound coin.
I think for me it would be the Spencer and Brannan double signing, and then it'd been followed by the Wednesday night victory over Rangers at Fir Park. I'm pretty sure it was Brannan that got the goal, or was it Spencer? It was one of the
two. That was Spenny, aye.
I can only, my first kind of memories of watching the English Premier League, John Spencer was playing for Chelsea, and I just thought we'd signed this world superstar, to be honest. It was so strange, and for him to make such a quick impact, that's one that I still remember to this day.
I was going to say, basically, the three there that were mentioned last, Brian McClure, and again, as it turned around, it was a pile of shite, but McClure, when he was, you know, coming back up the road, you were sort of hoping you were going to get a seasoned veteran who could turn on a 50 pence piece and would basically sit in the hole and be this great playmaker, and, you know, it just wasn't like that. John Spencer, as was mentioned as well, you know, I was looking forward to that. Tommy Coyne as well. I was pretty young at the time, but you know, my dad was telling me at the time he'd been top goal scorer for Dundee and Celtic and things like that. So I was looking forward to them as well. But other name would be Andy Gorham. I got a bit excited when we signed Andy Gorham because, you know, even though he was coming to the end of his career, after the initial excitement, he still put in a hell of a lot of good performances for us. Andy Gorham maybe would be my shout then.
Andy, is there any that's stuck in your mind, mate?
Probably Faddy's return the first time around. I remember he's kind of come back and trained with us and popped in for visits that many times that you kind of lose track of when he was actually with us and that there was any scope of him signing. But I just remember it was almost like an element of disbelief that he was kind of coming back at the stage that he actually did. You know, people, you know, saying, you know, never come back, it's a fantasy if you're believing he's coming back at this stage of his career. And, you know, when he did actually come back, it was quite exciting. It was at Dundee United he made his second debut against, and I think we got beat that night, but, you know, it was just great to see him back in claret number again. You know, genuinely back in claret number, no for testimonials or whatever the... You know, the case was our training matches or what have you. So probably his return. That was quite
a special mention for Esteban Casagolda as well, after the whole kind of soap opera and Steve went online about him signing. So that will probably live long in the memory as well.
Well, mentioning that obviously means that because you're not on Facebook, we've not got Ian Buchanan's response to this question, which is always my highlight of the podcast. So,
well, I think he texts me and he said something about that game back in February against Ross County. So, Conor Grant, I think it was his debut or something. I don't know. I'm just making things up there.
Right, guys, I think that's all we've got time for. Andrew, thank you very much, mate.
No, it's a pleasure to be on again. Thank you.
Jay Busta, thanks as always, guys. We got there second time round.
Cheers.
Thank you very much.
You've been listening to the MFC podcast. We'll be back following the Inverness game next Monday. Until then, thank you and goodbye. Get it? Can you see it all over my face? I tried to hide it, but I kept it in the cupboard in case. Case I liked it, I got a green light. I'm glad we had the party at your place. Oh yeah, it didn't feel right. Turning back to amber, red light. Red light spells the danger. You make your baby cry. FDQ, FDP, Barbadies and Mozambique. Me, I'm on Decatur Street.